Welcome, everybody, into the Benchwarmers Redemption. We are back. Sorry for this delay of shows. We apologize for the inconvenience. Busy schedules, unfortunately, for all of us, but we are back nonetheless. I am Sebastian Merrick, and joining me today are...
Jimmy Seatman.
Jordan Randall.
First off, welcome, Jordan. First time co-host here on the Benchwarmers Redemption. We're definitely thrilled to have you. Jimmy, welcome back.
Yes, sir.
See you wearing Baby Shark to taunt me, I feel like. But that's besides the point. We have so much to get into today. We're going to try to fit it all in an hour. It is going to be hard, but we are going to do our best. We're going to start with the Super Bowl. A phenomenal Super Bowl. The Chiefs come out on top 31-20. The Niners led in the going into the fourth quarter 20-10, and if I'm not mistaken, and completely collapse in that fourth quarter. A lot of blame.
Your, Jaguars a couple years ago.
Oh, stop.
And most of the blame is being placed upon Kyle Shanahan. I get that, but at the same time, I'm not really for that. I think Jimmy, we'll get to the Chiefs part of it soon. Jimmy Garoppolo's got to play better than that. I'm sorry. I get the run the ball, but that missed throw to Emmanuel Sanders, 20 of the 32 quarterbacks would hit that throw.
It's one of those things where you really can't put the blame on like anyone too much. I mean, people kind of killed Shanahan for not being aggressive enough, but in the opposite way, in the 28-3 comeback, people thought he was too aggressive.
Right.
And especially when you're the 49ers and your game is predicated on the run. Now, here's the thing with Jimmy G. If he can make a couple of those passes, then all of a sudden, you know, you're getting a couple of those first downs, you're able to maybe milk some time. But, you know, when you're playing against the Chiefs especially, this is why I think he probably should have been a little bit more aggressive. When you're playing against the Chiefs, you can't just run the ball three times, you know, maybe get a first down, run another three times, and give them the ball back. You have to constantly still be in score mode. And so I don't necessarily blame them a bit. And I give a ton of credit to the Chiefs for coming back, which is what they had done all year. But it was starting to look like at one point in the game, it was like, all right, that 3rd and 15 play where he got the big bomb Tyreek Hill, like, if they don't get that, if they don't complete that, you're starting to cringe a little bit, because then you're looking at a situation there where it's like, okay, do you go for it there? Because are you going to get the ball back with any sort of time? It's one of those things where I really think the 49ers didn't play that bad of a game. I thought, considering the circumstances, they did pretty well. But I thought all along the Chiefs were a better team. So.
Yeah, I did too. Any thoughts on that?
I'm just very happy that, what was it? It was a 50-year drought for.
Yes, it was 50 years.
I feel like we've dealt with the Patriots so many times that, you know, they appear in the Super Bowl so many times. It was like, what was it? 9 times in the last
19 years.
Nine times the last 19 years, which is an absurd level of dominance in a sport that is specifically designed that you can't do that.
Right.
You know, so you think about, like, exactly how many teams have gotten shut out from a Super Bowl win because the Patriots were there. And me, personally, I didn't care either way. I'm just happy that – I mean, well, I cared more about getting – I cared more about the Chiefs getting a Super Bowl win.
Yeah.
It's been 50 years, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, 50 years for it. So it's nice to see them win.
And really, like 50 years of, like, for the most part, not really being that good for most of those 50
years.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they up until Mahomes got there, they hadn't won a home playoff game since Joe Montana was their quarterback. I mean, they lost in some of the worst ways. I mean, they lost a playoff game in which they scored 2 touchdowns and the other team didn't, and they still lost.
I mean, last year it was kind of written that they were going to be good this year. Like, last year they did pretty well. Actually, they did really well.
They probably should have gone to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, I mean, D Ford, ironic enough, on the Niners now.
Yeah, 5-5 ain't offsides. No, but it was – I thought – I'm not going to kill the 49ers as much as others, because I think if they would have done the opposite, if they would have gone heavy with Jimmy G throwing them all, then we would have all killed them.
Oh, yeah.
If absolutely. They would have lost. So it's one of those.
It's a no-win situation when if you lose the Super Bowl, you're going to get killed. It doesn't matter.
And Kyle Shanahan's a really good play caller. Like, there's a reason that everywhere he's gone, the offenses have probably played above their head.
Absolutely. In some sort of way. I can't think of one offense that hasn't done that.
Your Browns had them in their grasp.
7-9, man.
Oh, you're a Browns
that's
fan?
Like that. Yes, I am. All Cleveland. All Cleveland, baby. I don't need any of your condolences. I will be just fine. I appreciate that. But I will go back to your point. I am very happy for Andy Reid. All this Andy Reid is not a Hall of Famer boo-boo talk. Just put it aside. He is a Hall of Famer.
He was a Hall of Famer before he won the game.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly with that. It's just a lot of nonsense.
And also, you know, I get it's different as a head coach, but when people say, oh, like, so-and-so hasn't won a Super Bowl, well, Andy Reid has won a Super Bowl as an assistant. So it's not like, it's not like, sometimes that happens. It was like the same thing when the Nationals won. Like, Davey, you won your first World Series. He's like, I won one in 2016 with the Cubs. That was pretty important. Like, yeah, he was the bench coach, but like.
But you still feel like you're on a team. You're still on a team that won. You contributed.
If you're on a staff, if you're a player, you know, maybe if you're a player that was on IR all year, you don't feel like you.
Right.
You know, but, but I think for a lot of these coaches, it means something as a head coach, but it's not like Eric Bieniemy, who's like the offense coordinator, is going to be like, oh, I didn't actually win a Super Bowl if he becomes a head coach, you know? So, I mean, it's good for him that he got it. Especially because I think at some point he deserved it. I mean, he in 21 seasons, he has 18 winning seasons.
Pretty crazy, isn't
it? That's really good. I mean, he basically –
it's amazing.
When you consider what he did with the Eagles, the run that they had, they probably should have won a Super Bowl. And then what he's done with the Chiefs, I mean, he came into the Chiefs when they were 2-14. Mm-hmm. And right away.
I feel like that feels like a lot nicer than joining the Patriots. And then
the Romeo Crennel 2-14 Chiefs. Don't forget
and,
that.
And they were bringing Alex Smith, but they were also smart enough to realize, and I think Reed was part of this, that they eventually had to move on from Alex Smith. Even though he was coming off his best season ever,
mm-hmm.
and they had to go to Mahomes. And now you look at Mahomes, and it's just like, I mean, this dude is off the charts.
I mean, he's got. I'm not saying he's going to be the greatest of all time. I'm not saying that, but he has the potential.
It's kind of like when Blaine talks about how Aaron Rodgers has like the most talent we've seen.
Yes,
I think you see that with Mahomes. Like, again, like some of the talk, like, oh, if he died tomorrow, he'd be a Hall of Famer. Like, that's a little bit nonsensical. But he has. I mean, he just it's just crazy because the moment he stepped on the field, you just knew as an NFL player,
right? Everyone except Matt Trudell.
Matt Trudell. Well, that's because Matt Trudell watches a lot of Big 12 football.
Yes, he does.
It's crazy. And I mean, if you look, at the future with him and Watson, who is in the same class, and Lamar Jackson, I think there's like a good mix. There was for a while in the AFC, there was not like any good young quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
It was still like it was always the old guard of
Johnny Manziel wasn't a good young quarterback.
he could have been. I was a Johnny Manziel believer, but now I think we have that kind of up and come. I think a lot of the good young guys at one point were in the NFC. Now you have them in the AFC.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be fun to watch, and Gardner Minshew too. So
and it wouldn't be a show with Jimmy Steedman without Gardner Minshew reference.
Gardner Minshew.
It wouldn't be a show without that. Congratulations to the Chiefs. Do you think they have the best chance to repeat next year? I know it's super early and super premature, but just you can do like a quick rapid
fire. Because
I
think they're gonna bring back, Chris Jones. I think they're gonna have most of their key guys back. If they give Mahomes an extension, this is not when it's gonna hurt them as much. So I mean, they have to, I think, be the favorites in the AFC unless the Patriots just like bring back Brady and then completely load up on like
offense.
Skill position guys, mm-hmm. which is what I think they will actually do. That's what I think this whole Brady thing is about, is like using leverage. Like, look, I can't throw to undrafted wide receivers anymore. You gotta, but besides that, and the Ravens as well too, especially because the Ravens have some money to spend this offseason. Hopefully they actually get a real wide receiver.
They have $30 million in cap, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but they can create like another $20 million pretty easy from like getting rid of Jimmy Smith and mm-hmm. like another guy. So
they spent some of that with Chuck Clark's extension, 3 years, $17 million.
That's pretty modest, though.
I know.
But yeah, I think they probably have to be, and I know we had discussions about like whether Lamar Jackson was MVP, and I think he was deservedly so the MVP this year. Absolutely. But there's no question that Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football right now. Like, maybe you could maybe, like, if you picked Russell Wilson, like, maybe I could, like, let you slide. But I think anyone else – and the thing is, I think it's, like
– I think Russell Wilson's the best.
I think it's a whole step above for Mahomes and what he's able to do. And that's kind of the scary part. So, I think the Chiefs are probably the favorites going into next year. But it's really hard to repeat.
It'll be interesting to see if Eric Bieniemy is there next year as well with him – being the big favorite for the Colorado head coaching job Buffaloes.
Yeah, he shouldn't take that.
I agree, but alma mater, he wants to be a head coach.
One interesting thing about both him and Robert Saleh is I think, and this hurts coaches a lot of times, having your team make it farther, I think, hurts your coaching search ways.
Absolutely.
Because you have to wait to interview. I mean, the last team to wait to interview, to wait to hire a guy was Kyle Shanahan, and that was about it. And they kind of knew from the jump.
I think Matt Patricia. Wasn't Matt Patricia? Matt Patricia, I'm pretty sure.
You know what? Yeah, maybe. But like, I think those guys knew, like, they knew from the jump they were going to get those guys. Besides that, you don't see a lot of guys go deep into the playoffs because I think a lot of teams want to know who their coach is going to be, like, early to mid January.
And the Frank Wright, Josh McDaniels saga with Indianapolis.
Yeah.
All right. So that's football. We will maybe come back if we have time. I doubt we will with all the topics we have. We're going to address Kobe Bryant now. We have not had the chance to address Kobe Bryant. Unfortunately, he passed along with 8 others in a plane crash in Calabasas, California. His daughter Gigi, the Altobelli family, John Altobelli, a famous JUCO baseball coach, Christina Mauser, who was an assistant coach, the Peyton family with 2 there, and the pilot, Ara Zabayan, unfortunately. It's just a terrible situation. Just your thoughts on a tragic, tragic loss for all.
It's a huge shock. And of course, when you have a professional athlete and they just retired, you can expect them to be around for a few more decades.
Right.
You know, you can expect them to be like living in their 80s, 90s, getting up to 100 with modern medicine. And with Kobe, he was such an influence to not just the game, but the culture of the game. You know, when we talk about some people who have influenced and changed the culture of modern day basketball, we look at Kobe Bryant and Allen Iverson. You know, they just their attitude, their style, their the way that they walked, the way that they talked. It's beyond their skill level of their influence to the game, because their level of influence to the culture was incredible.
Right.
But it's a really sad thing. You know, it's not the same with Muhammad Ali, where with Muhammad Ali it was like, well, he had Parkinson's disease and we had been kind of preparing ourselves for that.
Mm-hmm.
But with Kobe Bryant, it was like,
right.
You know, I got a text message from Jimmy telling me that Kobe Bryant had died. I didn't get a text message from Jimmy when it was just like, well, Muhammad Ali died. You know, it wasn't.
Putting you on the spot, I see.
Yeah. Because you disrespected Muhammad Ali. No. because what happened to Kobe Bryant was tragic. I mean, his daughter was on the plane.
That's the part that makes me the most sad.
Because she was 13 years old.
Yeah. And she had such a bright future. And it's not just Gigi Bryant either. Let's not forget the Altobelli's daughter and Peyton's daughter. I think that they're all people, like, unfortunately, and I understand it, they're going to get swept under the rug.
Yeah.
But we need to – I feel like – I'm trying to make the best effort to recognize every single victim.
Absolutely.
Because each have all had successful accomplishments or are on their way to successful accomplishments.
And it's when someone of that level of fame dies along with you, it's unfortunate that there's so much fixation on that one person that we do forget that this was a tragedy across the board.
Absolutely. No.
I think as far as – I mean, this is not even just the sports spectrum. This is anything in general. having someone as famous as Kobe Bryant, as young as he is, die as tragically as he has, I can't remember anything truly like it. I mean, especially in the sports world.
It doesn't happen very often.
The Angels pitcher who died of an
over Tyler Skaggs.
Tyler Skaggs, but
Jose Fernandez.
Jose Fernandez, even though he was a popular player amongst baseball, he did not have the level of fame.
Oh no, absolutely.
Kobe Bryant's fame transcended sports. He was one of those people who, whether for good or for bad, people knew who Kobe Bryant was, outside of sports. The influence he had, I think, on a lot of people. And I think it was said correctly, I think Brad Stevens said this, he was a lot of players Michael Jordan. Whether or not people, you can say LeBron, was better, and there was always the debate between that. But I think for a lot of people, his style, the whole Mamba mentality thing in general, I think a lot of people respected that. And he was as close as to personality wise and style wise, as much of a carbon copy as Michael Jordan as you could get. And I think a lot of people respected that. And at the end of the day, he had some of his funky ways, but he, no matter what you think about him compared to other players, he's one of the 10 or 15 best players of all time.
Yeah.
Which is an accomplishment in itself. When we're talking about the greatest of all time, we're really splitting hairs. The difference is this much a lot of the time. And then also a lot of the stuff he was doing outside of basketball after his career. I think he was finally living a life that he wanted to do, all the stuff he didn't get to do. And the fact that he had the Mamba Academy, and especially was very influential in the women's game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, and for a lot of these kids to have Kobe Bryant teach you and coach you, yeah, and go out of your way, that has to make such a huge impact. So, but yeah, this transcended everything. I think it hit a lot of people. I was kind of shook that day. It's one of those things where it's you don't, there's very little times that you don't know a person and they pass away and you feel strongly about it in any kind of way. I think it was extremely unfortunate, extremely sad, and also, to everyone else who was in that as well. I think it's one of those things, especially because you said his daughter was on the plane too, those kind of final moments that kind of, to think about, all right, there has to be a point in time where it's probably over or close to it. Right. And that probably has to be the most painful thing to think about for me. So,
when you were saying Kobe Bryant was the closest thing to Michael Jordan, I think one of the reasons why Kobe Bryant was very relatable was that he spoke about it. He was a dissected Michael Jordan. When people talk about, where is Michael Jordan's? How is Michael Jordan getting this good? And he's like, I wasn't all that good. And Kobe Bryant was like, look, I have this mentality. I wake up at 5 o'clock and I go practice
every day.
I wake up at 5 o'clock every day, go and practice. What do I have right now? I have what's called the Mamba mentality. I have that mentality that says I'm gonna go out there and do the thing to the best of my abilities every single day. And so he was more relatable in the sense that he was a dissected Michael Jordan. He actually spoke about what it was that made him great.
And I think that's why people respected him, is because of mentality. And then also at the end of the day, no matter if he would sometimes shoot some bad shots, he was fearless, and you have to be that way if you want to be a really good NBA player.
Yeah, I agree.
So
you got to be that way if you want to be good at anything.
Yeah. My favorite Kobe memory has nothing to do with his on-court accomplishments. When I grew up, you didn't hear when playing basketball just all over a place, whether it's in the gym, outside, on the courts, whatnot. You never hear when someone takes a crazy shot. Jordan, LeBron, whatever. You don't hear Jordan. You don't hear LeBron. It's always Kobe.
Yeah.
Kobe. Yeah. And that just shows you such the impact that he had. And it's funny. Jimmy knows this. I'm maybe, being from, born and raised in Akron, Ohio, as I am, I love LeBron. I adore LeBron. And even when I shoot, I'm like, Kobe. Yeah. I don't do LeBron. I'm like, Kobe, because that's just how it is. It's just that's just what you do, and that's the impact that he had.
The other thing it speaks
everyone.
To is the reason you're doing that is I think Kobe is probably the best like difficult shot maker of all time.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like again, are they some of them low percentage shots? Sure, but like he was willing to take them, and he could make them too. And so that's why it's like because he made those crazy shots, and he made kids be like, I want to do that.
Yeah, you know? Then now we have to deal with it and pick up where people will take stupid shots where they just don't have the talent to do it. It's like they missed the first. They say Kobe missed that one, then they start just cycling through a bunch of other players. It's like I couldn't bring honor to Kobe's name. Let's see if I can get Steph in there. Let's
can't happen. It's just
they might as well just say
same.
Shaq when they shoot.
Well, we definitely send out our thoughts and condolences and wish the best to those families. Kobe Bryant, Gigi Bryant, Peyton Chester, Sarah Chester, Alyssa Altobelli, Carrie Altobelli, John Altobelli, Kristen Mauser, Ara Zabayan. Rest in peace. All nine of those victims, you all lived great lives. All right. Who wants to talk some baseball?
Let's talk some baseball.
Let's talk some baseball. Let's talk some Mookie Betts. A blockbuster deal the second time around, as the first trade kind of got thwarted a little bit. But Mookie Betts, David Price to the Los Angeles Dodgers, Alex Verdugo, Jeter Downs, a prospect that I am absolutely in love with going back to Boston. Brusdar Graterol was supposed to go to Boston in the original deal. They did not like his medicals, so the Dodgers ended up doing a straight swap. Well, not really a straight swap. They sent up, Twins sent other prospects along with Brusdar to the Dodgers for Kenta Maeda. But that's obviously not the story. Mookie Betts to the Dodgers, it just makes them that much more dangerous. Thoughts on the Mookie Betts trade?
I mean, I guess some people have to be glad the Red Sox are just, like, throwing their season in. It bothers me to an extent, like, more so than the trade itself and whatever they got back. But when the Red Sox are operating like they're the Miami Marlins and how, like, their finances and everything like that, we have convinced ourselves in a sports society that, like, because the other thing, you hear the thing, Mookie Betts isn't going to resign there. Well, that's not what he said. He said he wants to test free agency. And if there's any team that can outbid anyone almost, it's the Boston Red Sox. The Boston Red Sox were $50 million over the luxury tax year they won the World Series. You know what the penalty they paid for that was?
I do not.
It was $12 million. That's the extra money they paid on top, which is nowhere near like the NBA luxury tax.
Right.
Where like if you know, even the penalties for when you continuously go over aren't that bad. The Yankees were over for 18 straight years. Like the Red Sox make $700 million of revenue. And so the fact that – and Mookie Betts is the one guy and everyone's like, well, you know, look at all the times we made mistakes like with Chris Sale and David Price and Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez. That's the other thing. They were $50 million over the luxury tax that year. They had $50 million in dead money with Sandoval, Ramirez, and the Cuban prospect they had signed.
Rusney Castillo.
That was $50 million of money not helping them at all. They make $700 million in revenue every single year.
Don't forget Nate Eovaldi, too, bad of a contract.
And that's the other thing. It's just like if you want to blame anything, blame the Red Sox for how they handle the contracts. But Mookie Betts is the one guy that you can pay and you should pay. And if the Red Sox or their teams are like, I don't want to do it, I think that's bad for the sport of baseball. Just because it's one of those things where it's like, you know what? If you're a Red Sox fan, shouldn't you care that he spends his career with your team? You know,
absolutely.
And people are like, well, you know, he should have just taken the contract he was offered. It's like, that's not how negotiations work. and the best negotiations are always if you're willing to walk away. They're like,
Mookie Betts is going to get at least $350 million.
Yeah, he's not getting less than Bryce Harper got. We have convinced ourselves a lot of times that players make too much money on this kind of stuff, but nobody ever talked about like owners. Like, I'm sorry, like all this move did for the Red Sox, especially including David Price, was just
damage the return
of what you could get. They probably actually in the second deal, I think, got a better deal, to be honest.
I think
and look, Alex Verdugo is a good player. He's gonna be good. Jeter Downs, I'm not like as high on him, but he'll probably be like an everyday player in the major leagues. Both of those guys, the chances of them combining for the WAR that Mookie Betts has already in his career is extremely unlikely. Like that, like that's the thing is, like, Mookie Betts is one of those guys who is a generational type of guy who is worth that kind of money. And yeah, even if you pay him $35 million a year, if you're the Red Sox and your payroll is $200 million a year, $250, that's, you know, a fifth, a sixth of it. It's not, you know, this isn't like the Diamondbacks where when they had Zach Greinke and they were paying him, like, you know, close to half of their payroll. That's it's not the same thing. And so, again, did they get a decent return for him? Yeah. But for the Dodgers, even if it's only a one-year rental, for them to get Price, basically have half his money paid down.
Yeah, you know, literally half his money.
Which is exactly what the Angels wanted to do when they got when they wanted were trying to go after him. And again, Price isn't great, but he's their third best pitcher now.
Yeah, you got
like starting pitcher
Kershaw.
Yeah, he's their third, but maybe if you think, but even like Ross Stripling doesn't start all the time. So
no, not Ross Stripling.
But yeah, to me, again, like, you know, it's just the practice of it in general. And they got under the luxury tax too, so good for them. I mean, I'm glad, you know, John Henry saved all his money. You know, funny thing is though, ticket prices went up this year for Fenway, so all that money they saved. Apparently, I've been told that player salaries is what makes ticket prices higher. So I don't understand why that happened. But
not to mention John Henry. I know you don't like soccer. John Henry is worth
$6.6 billion. John Henry, he owns both Liverpool and the Boston Red
and
Sox.
And Liverpool is the best soccer team by far. At least right now.
They may not have as much value as Manchester United.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, best, like, I at least know, like, yeah, no. He's worth $6.6 billion, but here's the thing. If he were to sell both the Red Sox and Liverpool, the Red Sox wouldn't sell for less than, like, $6 billion.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
Like, when a team becomes available, whatever Forbes has it listed, and so it just...
Yeah, sports teams are the most valuable, they're the most dependable investment. You know, like, what was it? Mark Cuban bought the Mavs for, I think it was like $300 million at one point. And now it's like the Dallas Mavs. It's like, hey, you know, they're not the team, but they're not selling for anything less than $3
billion. Even the Milwaukee Bucks like 4 or 5 years ago, before they blew up at all, sold for over $1 billion. I mean, we're talking about it wasn't even like every single franchise has increased their value. And so I think the next great sports
investment is going to be soccer teams.
MLS
teams are going to be the next. Think about how much they're going to be selling for right now, and we see every 4 years, the viewership in America for soccer starts to increase every 4 years. I mean, it didn't happen so much this year. I mean, like the women, of course, won it, but we all know that men's sports are bigger than women's sports, and the men weren't in it. The men weren't even in the World Cup. But I remember in high school. We would all like it was close to the year. We would all watch the World Cup. Yeah. I was working at a car dealership, and when the World Cup was on, they had to be like, "Hey, we need you guys to get back to work. We're all watching the World Cup, right? we need to work." But all
right,
but back to the trade in general. Yeah. To me at the end of the day, I feel bad. I think, you know, it's hard for me to say I feel bad for Boston sports fans, but now the Dodgers, especially from their end, I mean, to have Cody Bellinger and Mookie Betts in the same outfield,
forget the platoon now. Jock Peterson and AJ Pollock are going to platoon.
Well, Jock Peterson's not staying there.
You don't think?
Nah, because they're not paying him $10 million to be a platoon player. The trade fell through with the Angels because Artie Moreno didn't want to be patient enough to just wait. Even though I thought it was a good trade for them to just basically jump in.
Wasn't Ross Stripling in that deal too?
Basically just jump in and be like, hey, like, you want to be part of this? Kind of reminds me of when the Nationals got Trey Turner. They're like, you want to just, like, give us this guy? So it fell through on that end. But I don't think they're keeping it around, especially the fact that they have AJ Pollock and they can't move that deal. I think Peterson, I think they've been trying to move him, and so I don't know if he'll stay there.
I know a team that could use Jock Peterson very, very well.
The Indians?
Yeah.
Don't they have enough, like, left-handed bats?
Don't they have outfielders?
How have they not brought back Yasiel Puig at this point?
Well, they did just sign an outfielder, Domingo Santana.
You can't play the outfield.
That's what, well, is he going
to?
Well,
I mean, he is technically an outfielder, yes.
He's not going to play DH because we got Framil Reyes playing DH.
I think you may be better. I don't even know who would be worse in the outfield, to be honest. yeah, neither of those guys are very fleet of foot. I really like the return for the Dodgers. And look, I mean, again, does this guarantee you anything as the Dodgers? No, but like you've been trying to get over that hump.
Right.
And this helps in any way. And again, the Dodgers are another team where they can afford to have him go to free agency, see what happens, and they can make a huge deal. They haven't been the type of team to make huge, huge deals, but the Dodgers print money too. So I think this makes them just like, I mean, they're the favorites again. Does that mean anything? No, it didn't mean anything last year, but getting into the race in baseball, getting in the tournament is your first job.
Right.
You know, so.
That's all it's about. That's all it's all about.
What did you think of the trade?
I see your viewpoint. At first, I thought no team won except the Dodgers. No. At second, I am a huge Jeter Downs fan. I think he has all-star potential. Unlike, I mean, and people view it's a prospect. Yeah. I think he's phenomenal. I am also a huge Alex Verdugo fan as well. Yeah. So I. In instance, would I have preferred to re-sign Mookie? Of course. But if you knew you were going to move Mookie Betts, and I see your point of being cheap, I agree with
that. Well, the thing is, that was the driving factor in all of this, right? If they were already under the luxury tax, they'd probably just keep him at least till the trade deadline.
Right.
The driving factor, getting price in this, like just tanking the value of what you could get. And that's the thing that makes me most upset. Is like, and as a fan, if I'm a Red Sox fan, that doesn't do anything for me.
How about Ron Renicky as the new manager?
I didn't even see that. I mean, who cares? I mean, it just I mean, no offense, but like hiring a manager this late, it's kind of the same thing with Dusty Baker. Although I feel happy for Dusty.
So who cares about Ron Renicky? Let's get into Dusty Baker.
Dusty and the Astros. Hold on, they're. I mean, we
are
doing this right now, but they're
they are doing a press conference right now as we speak with them. With them, Jim Crane is on the stage,
owner
Dusty Baker, manager on the stage, and two players. You want to guess the two players on the stage?
If it's Alex Bregman, it'll be funny. It's not. Is it Alex Bregman?
Alex Bregman is one of the two players.
And Altuve.
And Altuve is the other. Those are the four on the stage right now.
Can I take a second before we say all of this? Especially with Marwin Gonzalez, what was it, yesterday or two days ago coming out?
Dallas Keuchel a couple weeks ago.
He was the first batter to do so, which I thought. A lot of some of the pitchers have separated themselves from the whole sign-stealing thing, you know, especially like I think Charlie Morton was like, I was in the bullpen a decent amount. He didn't know what was going on, whatever. He was the first. Like, I understand that, like, you know, for PR stuff and crisis stuff that, like, sometimes it's hard to deal with these things, but it is almost always better to come out and just be like, look, I'm sorry, we did it. Because, you know, the thing is, they're just like, oh, well, the commissioner's report says it, so I guess, you know, it's like, yeah. It's like, the investigation is over. We know it happened. Like, there's no did you or did you not. Like, at one point, they denied it, and now they're just kind of like, well, I guess that's what the report says. It's like, you did it.
Well, we do have one person still denying their involvement in the Astros scandal.
Who is that?
General manager Jeff Luhnow.
Yeah, that's complete horse crap. Especially because we're now learning a lot of the stuff
was initiated by Jeff Luhnow.
So like, and here's the thing is like, and then you have the AJ Hinch interview, which that wasted like 15 minutes of my life watching that. Like, you can tell these people have been told by somebody. They all have the same exact message to just deflect, deflect, and deflect.
Yeah,
which I get it. And now the only thing that someone has just completely flat out denied still is Jose Altuve with
the buzzer thing.
Now look, if you're Jose Altuve and you're talking like a PR person, he's gonna say, okay, you need to let me know truthfully right now, did you do it or did you not do it? And if you didn't do it, we're gonna come out and we're gonna deny, because that's, you know, and so, but if he's lying to that person, that makes it even worse.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know about that. You know, some of the pictures of stuff with like Josh Reddick, like holding the thing, those were what's it called? The MLB tracking stuff. Like, and that was cleared by the MLB. They were like, yeah, that thing on him was the tracking stuff or like the stat cast and stuff or whatever. So, you know, that's different. But just how they've handled the situation in general, it's just like, if you were to just own up to it, this probably would all be over by now. Not over. They'd probably still get stuff. But I think especially how other players have felt about it. And you heard there was an Angels pitcher who came out who was real, real hard against them. It's just like, that's the thing I think.
Mike Clevenger threatened to
I think most pitchers are pretty upset about it. Especially because, look, I understand when you're in the situation while it's happening, it's hard. Like, you know, with a guy like Mike Fierhuis, it's like, oh, why didn't you say anything? Well, do you want to become a social pariah in baseball and never be trusted by any teammate ever? So that makes sense why you didn't say anything while it was happening. But for them not to just address the situation, especially for, I think, some of the stuff like Alex Bregman has said, who loves to talk, has somehow, you know.
Super quiet now. It's very, very weird.
It's just like, just admit it. You know, this is the same thing with people who get caught using steroids or whatever, performance enhancing drugs. If you just admit it, I've never seen anyone admit it and move on. It's always like, oh, I didn't know I took this. It was an accident. It's just like, I'm sorry. Like, we're not going to buy it. Like, people appreciate honesty at the end of the day. Like, are they still going to be upset about it? Sure. But people appreciate honesty. And so with this whole situation, how they've approached it, and for how big this was, like, this to be the probably, like, the biggest in-game cheating scandal in, like, the last 50 years, I think they've addressed it horribly. And it just... especially when everyone, we now see that everyone kind of knew they were cheating. It wasn't just people like, in baseball really didn't do anything about it. It wasn't until like a reporter found out and started saying stuff. Like, that's the whole thing is like, also, you know, if you ever think of anything suspicious is happening, don't go to baseball, go to a reporter who can put the news out there. I think they've handled this terribly. So that's how I feel about it.
I think this scandal is rivaling the steroid scandals in the late 90s. When you look, the Astros' record was fantastic. Their offense was incredible.
Yeah, you know, probably had the best lineup.
It was like, what, 19-19 Yankees?
1920. They had the best OPS since the 1927 Yankees, which is literally considered the greatest lineup of all time.
And so now we have to say, all right, well, how much exactly did the science ceiling have to do with it? And I think a lot of it. I think it had a lot to do with it. Absolutely. You know,
I don't buy any of this. The science ceiling, I mean, if you know what pitch is coming.
Yeah.
Hitting a pitch is the hardest thing you can do in sports, you know. The general manager, he was denying involvement, right?
Jeff Luhnow.
Jeff Luhnow. He knew what was going on.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It reminds me of the steroids thing where it's just like, oh, you know, like I was taking some type of supplement that I didn't know. It's like when you get to that level of athletics, everybody's taking some type of supplement to supplement their whatever they do, and a lot of them are not paying that close attention to what they're taking. You know, that it reminds me of the whole, oh, you know, I was taking a tainted supplement. It's like, yeah, no, you weren't. You know what you were doing. There was a UFC champion named TJ Dillashaw. He was taking EPO, and the only way that you can actually get it is an injectable form. And so when USADA got him, it was like, there was no, oh, I was taking a tainted supplement. It was like,
gotcha.
Whoops.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a terrible look for the Astros. I agree, it's not been handled great. Quick questions for both you guys. AJ Hinch, will he return to be a manager? Not would you hire him. Do you think he will be back managing in baseball?
Like, as an actual manager? I think he'll be, like, on a staff, but I don't. I think some part of that interview screamed to me he did that I want to manage again. I'm not going to, like, tank my career with this interview, but I'd bet against it.
You would bet against it. What do you think?
I don't know enough to be able to say, one way or the other. Him and I have had this joke that we do the Seatman Sports thing on YouTube, and we wanted to call one of them Seatman and the Simpleton because I'm a huge mixed martial arts fan. While you guys are talking about I'm a big basketball fan, you know, big football fan, soccer. I play soccer. Baseball is not my forte. There's like, he was Seatman and the Simpleton. We would call it Stephen the Simpleton when I'm on, because it's like, oh, well, my discussion is, oh, how much exactly do groin kicks have what's the statistic on groin kicks and winning the fight?
I say AJ Hinch does return. I say he returns next year as a manager. And you know where I think he's going to return next year?
Where?
Right here in our backyard. The Baltimore Orioles.
I thought you were about to say the Nationals. I was like, kicking the ball Davey out?
Baltimore Orioles. I would never do any such thing to kick my man Davey Martinez out. But talking about the greatest manager
You know, for the Astros, they could take some advice from Davey Martinez. Bumpy roads lead to beautiful places.
Yes, yes. Beautiful. Just the most touching quote, I think, of all time. It just means the world to me. Luis Rojas, Mets manager. Thoughts on the Mets?
Again, do I have any opinion of this? No. Like, I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know enough about – like, it's really hard, especially for managers in baseball, because so much of what you judge them on is their tactical, like, stuff. Because we don't get to see, like, their everyday interactions. So I have no idea. Like, I think for the Astros, the Red Sox, and the Mets, this is all – they're all kind of in really tough situations.
Very tough.
Hiring managers – you know, basically right before pitchers and catchers report in spring training. And all of the playing that goes into spring training and everything like that, a lot of it's done by the manager. So, and they don't even get to hire their own staffs. I think that's a big thing we haven't talked about.
I agree.
They're basically stuck with the former staffs. So if you're Dusty Baker, you're not really like a huge analytics guy or whatever. Like, your coaching staff may be teaching things that you don't want to practice. You know, maybe he's like, I don't want to practice launch angle, you know, or something. Like, so, like, those are things that I think is really hard. When you don't even get to have your own staff with you, that's really tough in any sport. So that's, like, my biggest takeaway from this. How much does it matter? I think in baseball, a really good manager can probably win you, like, 5 or 6 games, and a really bad one can probably lose you, like, maybe, like, 5 or 6 games. So there's a swing there. But I think, you know, for the Astros, they still have to be the favorite. And with the Mets, I think their problems are going to be as they always are. They have kind of an older team. They rely on a lot of pitchers who get injured a lot. I think they're just like slightly above average. I kind of feel a little bit the same way about the Nationals this year, but I think, you know, it doesn't change my opinion of the Mets.
I think the Mets, I'm going to say this for the preview show when the week before the MLB starts, I think the Mets are going to stink. Let's just say that. They're going to stink. Flat out stink.
I've kind of always, like, the Mets have been operating on this, like, level of let's just keep treading water. They probably should have rebuilt a year ago, instead they doubled down with the Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz deal. The problem is that if they ever want to try to get better, they have a terrible minor league system.
Yeah.
So, like, what trades are they going to make? They obviously don't want to take on money either.
What's more likely? Just, this is going to be a funny scenario. What's more likely? The New York Mets will win the World Series, or Jeff Luhnow gets another job?
I mean, Jeff Luhnow getting another job.
I think so.
I think people are forgiving enough. The Mets winning the World Series, like, I wonder what their odds are right now. Like, what, like, 25-1, 30-1?
I think that's high. I think it's a little too high. It should be lower than that.
I think like 15 or 20-1.
Oh, I mean the other way. My fault. Oh, okay. Other way. My fault.
Yeah. So that's one thing is, like, I think there's a more than like 1 in 30 chance that Jeff Luhnow gets hired somewhere else again. Yeah. So that's the thing is, it just I'm not a huge believer in the Mets. I probably, like, you're probably lower under than I am, but
no. Yeah. And we'll see what happens. Back to the NBA. Trade deadline occurred last week. Yeah. Lots of moves. Which move? We got 4 moves to discuss. D'Angelo Russell, the 4-way deal, or the 4-team deal, Covington, Capella, Marcus Morris, or Andre Drummond. Which one do you guys want to do first?
Marcus Morris.
Yeah.
Fire away.
I'll let you take the lead on this one.
I really like this move for the Clippers. I think upgrading over Mo Harkless was a big deal, considering that he's just not a great shooter. Morris isn't a 40% shooter like he is this year from three, but he's not afraid of the big moment. And the biggest thing is he's one of the only guys in the league who can, like, adequately guard LeBron.
That's exactly like what I was thinking.
And if he would have gone to the Lakers, he would have been one of the only guys who could actually guard Paul George and Kawhi. And so that's kind of the big thing. Is he perfect? No, but
he
shot well this year. The one thing you kind of are afraid of is he's a bit of a chucker. But you know what? Like the Clippers to me, especially how they've played recently when Paul George and Kawhi have both been on the floor, I think they're 19-4 with both of them together playing. It's a big deal for them because now they just like the problem with the Lakers is they don't really have wings to throw at guys to defend. You know, you don't expect LeBron to defend them all game long, but he may have to. The Clippers have a lot of guys. Like the key to beating a LeBron team is having a lot of guys to throw at him defensively. Nobody can stop him, you know, forever. But I really like the move for the Clippers. They give a kind of a crappy first this year. Which in a bad draft. And again, the Clippers are all in on right now.
Yeah.
Both Paul George and Kawhi have basically 2-year deals with a player option. So there's no like ifs, ands, or buts. And so I really like the move for the Clippers, especially because the two other teams who were in on him really were the Lakers and the Bucks, and keeping him away from both of those teams I think is a big deal considering that, you know, these are the top three teams probably vying for a title at this point.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
I was surprised Iguodala didn't get traded.
Well,
He did get traded. That's one I did forget about.
He
went to the Miami. Heat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He went to the Heat. I thought that it would have been. I think what the Lakers are doing right now is they're playing a bit of the long game right now. I don't think they want to trade Kuzma, even though he's not panning out the way that a lot of people expected him to.
Personally, I'm so glad they didn't trade Kuzma.
Yeah,
I mean, why not just trade your one young act? I mean, he's exactly. Your one.
So here's the thing, right? Is that I think especially like after this season, like how much value does he have, right? He's on now. He's going to be properly paid soon,
right?
Here's the thing about Kuzma. He's not that good right now. There's potential there, but he doesn't fit that well with LeBron and AD. I don't think. The question was always going to be, if you're going to cash him in right now, would it be worth it? Now, the biggest problem with them trying to get Morris was salary matching. There was nothing – they didn't have a lot of movable pieces that they could do in a trade to get to that salary matching. They would have to trade like 4 or 5 guys. And also, that doesn't happen in the NBA because of roster spot issues. So I thought maybe they'd also be in on Derrick Rose. I was surprised he didn't get traded.
Yeah.
But apparently he's really happy in Detroit. It's close to Chicago, his hometown. I guess he just likes there. And look, like, good for him. He was kind of in a dark place in NBA circles like a year or two ago.
Unfortunately.
I liked it for the Clippers. I guess, what did you think of the deal? Because I want to talk about the Covington one next.
All right. For Marcus Morris, I thought it was a win-win. Yeah. I actually like what the Knicks got. It sounds like I'm a bigger Mo Harkless fan than you are. I think Mo Harkless is the type of – the Knicks are nowhere near a championship-level team. But Mo Harkless would be an extremely valuable rotation player on a championship team. Now, I'm not saying the Knicks are going to contend.
I don't know.
Why did you put Knicks and championship in the same sentence?
I just said they weren't going to ever win.
But that's like saying water is wet and fire burns and the champs are and the Knicks are going to win the championship.
He did say it was his dream to play for the Knicks, but you've had a lot of guys say. You had DeAndre Jordan say that last year too, and then he went across the hall. So
I feel like that's a dream of mediocrity.
I like Mo Harkless. I think he's a very good defender.
I mean, getting a first is what they can
and
get
getting
for
him. A first for 2 months is it really? I mean, what's the regular season? 2 months? I mean, obviously the playoffs, but 2 months. Yeah. Season, I think it's great. And if they want to keep him, re-sign him next
and
year.
Here's the crazy thing about the Knicks: they signed him by accident.
Yeah.
They did not have the cap space, and then the whole Reggie Bullock like medical thing, and so they're like, oh, we have extra money, let's do this. So literally all these other guys who were like, oh yeah, we could flip them at the deadline if we sign them to these 1 or 2 year deals, you know, Wayne Ellington and Julius Randle and Taj Gibson, we'll get value for them. It's like, well, that didn't happen at all actually. So and now you have the Knicks hiring Leon Jones and Worldwide West. I've never gotten why it's just like the Lakers did the same thing with Pelinka and Magic. Why not just go get the smartest basketball guy you can to run your organization.
Yeah. They want to have that legacy because
they're trying to attract free agents, you know. But the problem is that with the Knicks, if they were just a competent franchise, like if they were just competent, there would be free agents.
Well, they did fire Steve Mills. You know, finally
to this day, they are still the most valuable.
$4.6 billion.
And again, if they were to actually go on sale, they're not selling for less than $10 billion. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's like to the opportunity to like join the Knicks. No, it's just it's an embarrassment. They had their PR guru go on like First Take or whatever.
Steve Stout.
And like it's like Steve Stout. And I was like, I recognize who this guy is. Why do I know who this guy is? Oh, he's a music guy. Why is he for you? Yeah, he's a music guy. He worked for
He is in charge of rebranding the Knicks and putting the Knicks brand and James Dolan in a better light.
You know what's going to rebrand them? Winning, drafting, and developing players. They have not.
What happened to Porzingis?
Yeah, they have not signed a rookie they have drafted to an extension in these last two decades. Think about that. Not only have they not drafted one, they haven't signed one to even
maybe
like
Mitchell
a deal
Robinson
afterward.
Breaks the curse.
Probably not. But here's the other thing about the Knicks. They have R.J. Barrett and they have Mitchell Robinson, who are the two guys you could probably say with any type of confidence moving forward are going to be maybe on the next good Knicks team. I don't even know if R.J. Barrett's good.
I don't. I don't think he's that good.
I think, is solid. I think he's good. I think he's
solid. You know I'm not. Coming out of the draft, you know I don't think R.J.
Barrett's.
Just
like they don't even have, like, you know, like, that was a problem with his offseason where it was just kind of like they should be in complete asset accumulation mode. But they were just like, yeah, let's go get these mediocre players. And it just – they don't have anything moving forward. And so what they need to focus on is that. And they're so worried about, oh, 2021 free agency. They're probably not going to be good enough. Like, I think once Giannis, I think, signs a Supermax extension, and then you have Kawhi and Paul George who are the next two biggest free agents in 2021, who I would say at
and
this
LeBron.
Point – and LeBron. But I would say, are all those guys favored to stay where they are?
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just like
I can't imagine.
After that, you're looking at like Drew Holiday,
DeMar DeRozan, if he opts in.
And so it's just like everyone has all their sights on 21-21 free agency, but there's a chance that it's not really that great of a class.
Yeah.
It really upsets me just because it's just they're so incompetently run that like again if they were just as incompetent, like here's the thing with the Lakers, at least when they were bad they were getting good draft picks and kind of hitting on those picks so they could eventually trade them or use them as assets. Yeah. Like Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart and Kyle Kuzma, by the way, really good late first round picks, good enough to be able to use something. The Knicks haven't had any of that success. Like Kevin Knox.
Issues with playing Fortnite.
I'm sorry, what?
Issues with playing Fortnite. If you remember this a year ago.
I thought it was a David Price, but I
no. So Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson are apparently suffering from lack of sleep problems because they are up playing Fortnite with James Dolan's kids.
They're professional athletes.
I mean,
there's so many questions. How do you get to that level of skill with having that lack of discipline?
Kevin Knox, he's just not good. Like, I mean, just so I don't even know what we're talking. Okay, now let's get back to the thing I find very interesting. The Houston Rockets.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Rockets. I agree with you. The Andre Iguodala deal, by the way, good deal for Miami.
Yes.
Go ahead with the Rockets.
I like the deal for Miami. I thought if they were going to get Gallinari, that would have been even like put over the top.
Six minutes to get these three deals.
Okay, anyways, I like the Miami deal because they didn't get rid of any of the young players to do what they did. That's all I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
The Houston Rockets, most fascinating team in basketball to me right now. I know people talk about the hate watching them, but like their commitment to small ball and how much it works right now.
You love
they
it, don't
went,
you?
No. They went
you
all
love
in
it.
On
no,
small
think,
ball.
Here's why I love it, because it's different.
Isn't their tallest player 6'4"?
6'7".
Oh, 6'7".
Isaiah Hartenstein.
Isaiah Hartenstein ain't playing.
Well, he's still on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, he's not playing.
Tyson Chandler.
They haven't played those guys in any meaningful minutes in the last six games. They played the Lakers in a game, and the Lakers ended up losing. The interesting thing about what the Rockets are doing is that the Lakers tried so hard to exploit mismatches. They were, like, not running an actual offense. They were just, like, exploit the mismatch, which is exactly what the Rockets want you to do. And we know why the Rockets won. They hit 15 more threes than the Lakers did. Again, is this going to work in the playoffs? I have no idea. It probably won't, just because I don't think the Rockets are the best team in the West. But it's interesting. And I like that they're going all in on it, especially because I don't think Daryl Morey is going to be there next year. I think he's tired of
Tillman Fertitta. Nor do I think Mike D'Antoni will be there next year.
Yeah, I think he's tired of Tillman Fertitta. I think we're all tired of him. You know, because
if you ever bring up
to him that apparently they never mention the luxury tax in any of their meetings, and they it never comes up. It's nothing. And if you accuse him of it, he gets very upset. But it's interesting, and Covington so far has been really good for them, especially because I think guys go to there, and he is a good 3-point shooter. I think guys go there and they get the green light, and I think they become better. And the other thing, Russell Westbrook has been amazing these last six or seven games.
Yeah.
Because the biggest thing, I think the reason they traded Capella.
He still shoots below 30% from 3-point range.
I get it, but here's the thing now. He's getting so much better looks at the rim. And I think the one thing that Morey said that was interesting, he didn't think he could have two non-shooters in the court at the same time with this team. That was the thing about Westbrook, was that he was a non-shooter. This opens up a lot for him, and he's been finishing at the rim and at an incredible percent. Which is what he needs to do. He's been taking a lot less threes. And so that's the interesting thing to me. Again, do I think they're going to win it all? No, but they're interesting. And when even though the Jazz beat them, they basically played Rudy Gobert off the floor in that game. So I feel bad for these centers. I mean, JaVale McGee looked like he had no idea what to do against them.
Yeah.
Anthony Davis is skilled enough where he can do it. Jokic is. But
Clint Capella to the Hawks. You like that?
Yeah.
For the Hawks?
Yeah. Give up a mid-ish first rounder in a crappy draft for a guy you know is really good. Yeah.
And T-Wolves, Malik Beasley, solid player. Denver,
yeah, I like it. Denver gets a first
rounder to get rid of
the depth. I like it. And then D'Angelo Russell.
Let's get the D'Angelo Russell next.
If anything, even if they're still bad, at least him and Karl Anthony Towns can play Xbox together after games and be happy. So the Warriors part of it. We don't have time for this, I guess, at this point. But
yeah, 3 minutes.
The Warriors.
I don't get it, man. I
like it for the Golden State.
Oh, my God.
I love it for Golden State. I'm going to tell you why. I think Andrew Wiggins, these next 30 games, is going to dominate. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to package this pick, their first rounder. They're going to package Wiggins. They're going to package the T-Wolves pick.
Nope.
And then they're going to try to get somebody else.
Here's the thing.
If
that was your plan, you should have just kept D'Angelo Russell. Because that's the thing. That's why I hated it. If your plan was to
I don't think D'Angelo Russell is as valuable as that T-Wolves pick.
Andrew Wiggins is the second worst contract in the entire NBA. In most people's mind.
Which one's worse?
John Wall.
Kevin Love?
John Wall. The Cavs.
You would rather have Andrew Wiggins.
The Cavs would not trade Kevin Love for Andrew Wiggins straight up.
I disagree with that wholeheartedly.
No, they would not do it.
I disagree with that wholeheartedly.
And if they did, they'd be dumb to do it.
I completely
even though
disagree
Kevin Love completely wants out. No, that's Kevin Love is a substantially better basketball player. Like Andrew Wiggins,
I agree with that. But we're at this point in time
where here's the thing, and everyone's like, "Well, here's the biggest thing." They're like, "Well, he'll just be Harrison Barnes." Here's the thing about Harrison Barnes: he was big enough and physical enough; he could play four in those death lineups. Andrew Wiggins is literally the opposite of big and physical.
Yeah,
he never gets rebounds, ever. Even though they're not that important, he never gets them. His assist percentage is awful. He's an okay shooter from three. So, again, can he be good for them? Yes. But I think if their goal was to get a star, keeping D'Angelo Russell and using their pick this year, I don't know how much.
Your viewpoint is D'Angelo Russell is more valuable than Wiggins
in
that pick.
There are more teams.
I disagree with that.
Here's the thing. At the end of the day, this is why.
1 minute.
You think the Timberwolves' thirst for D'Angelo Russell was going to go away? If anything, take it into the offseason. If that's all you have, then take it. But that trade wasn't going anywhere is my biggest point.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair. The Timberwolves' thirst for D'Angelo Russell was so strong, it wasn't going anywhere. So
I agree with that. Andre Drummond. I know you do not like it one bit.
What was his first game there against the Clippers? That was the most an Andre Drummond game.
Second game was pretty good. Well, Tristan Thompson, his second game. My goodness, that was a fun game to watch. I like it because you gave up nothing.
If he opts in, cool.
If you're not going to, it's 1 year. It prevents us from spending dumb money on a on a huge contract like a Kobe Altman thing. This has been the Benchwarmers Redemption. My name is Sebastian Merrick, and with me today,
Jordan Randall
and Jimmy Soup.
And until next time, peace, stay safe, and remember to love yourself.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.